W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. The White House has confirmed the release of five American prisoners in Iran. CBS's Linda Kenyon reports.
National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson says the five Americans who were unjustly detained have been placed under house arrest. Watson's statement goes on to say this is an encouraging step, but that they never should have been detained in the first place.
He says negotiations are ongoing but delicate. President Biden has declared a major disaster now in Hawaii.
We have just approved a major disaster declaration for Hawaii, which will get aid in the hands of the people desperately needing help now.
Thousands of people have been displaced in Maui, and these fires are still raging. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is there.
Crews are battling three wildfires across the island of Maui, and they are now getting assistance from the Hawaii Army National Guard. Two helicopters are dropping huge buckets of water on the deadly fires. The flames spread too fast for help to reach the western town of Lahaina, much of it destroyed. Wind-whipped flames engulfed the historic community on Tuesday, wiping out homes, businesses, and hotels.
The fires are being fueled by dry conditions and a passing hurricane. Over in the Atlantic, NOAA's upgrading its prediction and says hurricane season will be above normal. Lead forecaster Matthew Rosenkrantz.
During active years, there is a doubling of the chance of a hurricane making landfall on the east coast of the U.S. relative to normal or inactive years.
And this intense heat is making things worse. Inflation increased last month to 3.2%, kicking up most consumer prices.
Shelter remains the major contributor, making up 90% of the increase, offsetting big declines in fuel prices as well as lower prices for medical care and used cars and trucks. The core rate, excluding gas and food, and the focus of the Federal Reserve, was up a weaker 4.7% in July, and that's raising Wall Street's odds of the Fed pausing rate hikes when it meets in September.
That's CBS's Jason Brooks reporting. An accused assassin is dead and six alleged accomplices are in custody now after reportedly killing presidential candidate Fernando Villavicencio in Ecuador. Bill Freeman is an expert on politics there.
Villavicencio was one of the better known investigative journalists in Ecuador. He'd built his career over the last 10 to 15 years. Somewhat of a maverick, he was famous for going on social media, revealing evidence of corruption in the government.
Ecuador's president blames organized crime. The Writers Guild says it plans to meet with Hollywood producers again tomorrow for another bargaining session. The union's been on strike there for more than 100 days now. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack, but not with ZipRecruiter. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you the needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
What are your music playlists, podcast feeds, and social media scrolls all have in common? Spoiler alert, they're a reflection of you.
And that's what the State Farm Personal Price Plan has in common, too. It gives you options to help you personalize your coverage so that you can protect what you care about most at an affordable price just for you, so you can see more of yourself and everything you love.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to StateFarm.com today to create your State Farm Personal Price Plan. Prices vary by state. Options selected by customer. Availability and eligibility may vary.
It's summertime in Wisconsin, and whatever the weather, it will impact you and your plans.
Should I water the garden? Will our event be rained out? Count on your local Civic Media radio station for in-depth details and the most up-to-date forecast.
Temperatures are rising into the mid and upper 70s under sunny skies.
It's your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. Are you noticing more military airplanes flying overhead this week? The annual Northern Lighting Counterland Training is taking place at Volk Field in Camp Douglas. We are one of several counties in the state where 1,000 participants and 60 aircraft are practicing their skills in the skies. The exercise will continue until August 18th, providing tailored, cost-effective, and realistic combat training for participating units in a joint and multinational environment. The second summer youth production premieres this weekend at the Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. It's the world premiere of an original play by R.M. Husted, the comedy Toasted. See shows Friday, August 11th at 7 and Saturday, August 12th at 2. Auditions for the first main stage production of the season, Blythe Spirit, are August 14th and 15th at 6:30, directed by Lynn Degarski. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows dip down to about 57. Northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 80. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 58. Partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 79.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this August 10th, 2023. Have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 3:30, we are going to welcome in Anna James, Regional Natural Resources Educator with UW-Madison Extension, Wood County. Right now, our great friend, Sally Kistner, Executive Director of the Arts Council, is with us. We're going to talk about the 23-24 season. Sally, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
Good to see you. How are you doing?
Great.
I have to admit to you, Sally, I'm so used to your partner, Eric, being here. Of course, Eric Britnacher with the Performing Arts Center. I almost went to Eric with that and introduced him for a second. I'm sorry about that. But Sally, thank you so much for being here. And just right out the gate, got to tell you, I appreciate you and the Arts Council, all these amazing acts you guys bring here, all the scouting you do. Really appreciate you, Sally.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and dive into the season, and things kick off in October, it looks like.
Yes, October 12th, we have Sean Johnson and the Big Band Experience. If anyone was at the Tonic Sol Fa concert a while back, several years ago, before my time in this position, Sean Johnson is one of the vocalists there, and his voice has been described as liquid gold, and I would have to agree with that. So he's kind of a newcomer to the traditional pop, but he's fusing a big band spirit with an inventive edge.
And truly inventive. I like to preview these things before you and I get to talk, and I had not heard Sean outside on his solo stuff before.
Right.
Wow. Really interesting angle on the songs and the way he is doing this. It's always cool to me, these acts you bring in, but they're unique. Almost every act you bring in has something unique or something different that they do. It's not just great entertainers. It's that they do something fun and different that's going to pull people in. Mm-hmm. It's very, very smart. I really enjoy that. It's going to be a great, I have no doubt that this is going to sell well.
Right.
And again, that's in October.
October 12th. Mm. And then we move on to November, and we are bringing back the Gatlin Brothers.
Yeah.
I don't know how much intro they even need.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But they are amazing, and we are excited to bring them back in again. We sold out last time, and we're heading toward that already.
Yeah, I believe it. And you're right, they don't need much of an intro. You guys don't need me to give you the highlights and their credits or anything. But I will say, especially with the passing of Tony Bennett recently and that, and not even knowing that he was sick, there are acts like this that I hope the Gatlin Brothers perform for another 50 years. But you just never know when an act is going to call it quits and kind of wrap things up.
Right.
A band like this, it could happen sometime soon. Mm-hmm. You get a chance to see them, especially you don't have to travel 4 or 5 hours or a state away to be able to see them. Like, get them while you can. See them while you can.
Absolutely. And these are the originals. People keep asking me if it's a tribute, and no, it is the originals, and they still sound amazing.
Oh, I don't know how they've done that.
I don't either.
How they've kept their voices intact like that. It's amazing. And one of those acts, too, that they're really good listening to the music on your computer, or your phone, or whatever. You got to hear them live.
Right.
You got to hear them live. It's so different hearing them live. It's everything you love about their music, just with so much more heart and passion.
And definitely the way they interact with the audience as well. It just sucks you in.
It really does. Really does. I find that that's some of my favorite thing about performers is the performer that can be also an MC.
Exactly.
Looking at our next act in December, really fun idea for this one. I want to talk more about this, how you found this act.
Okay, so this one was recommended to me by some other Wisconsin Presenters Network venues. They have had Terry Lee Goffey. He does a Christmas show and, you know, a regular show as well. But I thought it might be a nice slot to get him into for a Christmas show here. He's amazing. He looks and sounds just like Johnny Cash.
It's incredible.
And in fact, Tommy Cash, who is Johnny Cash's brother, has given him the thumbs up as, you know, being an awesome replication of Johnny.
Doing my homework on Mr. Terry here, I had not heard of him before, to be honest. And one of the first things I read was that, Sally, and immediately got goosebumps when I read his comments on that and how much he likes this kid and what he's doing. And he said he had a really good comment about how Johnny's music will always be alive because of the fan base, but how important it is for artists to cover his music and how much that would have meant to Johnny. And I thought it was a really interesting note on that. Right. And this kid is good. I'm a diehard Johnny Cash fan, and I'm not always big on acts I love that much, seeing a cover of them or anything, even from really like talented artists that I like, seeing them cover their songs. I'd love to see this act. I would love to see this performer. And the Christmas angle on it is fun.
You know, that's what I kind of was drawn to with this, because our Christmas show brings a lot of families out as well. And to expose the younger audience to Johnny Cash, I think, is kind of cool.
It's nice that we can also offer these things where me and my friends can go, me and the guys can go there, have a good time, and you and your family can go, and we're all going to have a great time.
Right.
It's a perfect time of year for that, too.
Yep.
Again, that is December 14th. Got great stuff coming up in January here.
Okay, so the January 25th show, we originally had I Am King, the Michael Jackson Experience, booked. And just last Thursday, I was informed, been doing a little bit of rushing around here, but I was informed that the person who portrays Michael Jackson with that group was having some health issues and had major surgery in May. He canceled his 23-24 tour. However, the agent found a replacement, and it's called MJ the Illusion, and he sounds fantastic. His dance moves are wonderful. His name is Michael Knight, and he actually sought out the choreographer and backup dancer that Michael Jackson had in Cirque du Soleil, and he employed him and learned quite a bit from him. And you can see it in the dance moves, definitely. He also went above and beyond and sought out the vocal coach, Seth Riggs, and trained with him as well. So I think this is a good substitute. I think, hopefully, I contacted everybody who had purchased tickets already and have not heard back yet. I just sent the letter out on Monday, but I have not heard back yet. But just so everyone is aware, when you're buying tickets now, it's changed to MJ the Illusion. Same ticket price. If you currently have a ticket, you can keep that one. All I'm doing is changing the name of it in the ticketing system, basically.
Yeah. A shout out to that agent for hooking this up.
You bet.
You don't hear that often in the industry. That's really cool to hear. That's encouraging to hear that.
Right.
That's nice. And Sally is almost underselling this gentleman. although I did not know those details, that makes perfect sense, because I'm watching him and it's one thing, you know, I think you listen to The Weeknd, he sounds a little like Michael, but he ain't got the dance moves, you know?
Right.
This guy, he sounds a lot like Michael, and certainly, but it's the dance moves.
It is.
It's the combination for me.
Is.
I was blown away by that. I was like, ooh, I hadn't seen somebody be able to moonwalk as smoothly as Michael till this guy.
Right.
I stand by that. Like, I think that's very impressive.
And I think the backup vocals are great, too.
Yeah. That's a great act. And nice job by you and this agent being able to so quickly be able to flip this. I see it very easily. I can't imagine how it was on your end.
It was a little hectic.
I bet. Yeah. Here we are. Got it set.
Yep.
February. Great one coming to town. This one is a big one, Sally.
I am so excited.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I was to pick a favorite this year, I'm not sure I could. However, I did see Uptown Live. And about a year ago, and that, as soon as I saw them, I'm like, I have to book these guys. They had the whole audience just standing and getting into the music. It's it's amazing. It's Motown soul. And they just do kind of a different spin on it, too. But yeah, their dance moves, their energy on stage, their vocals, everything about it is fun.
You remember the Jersey Boys, that kind of experience? My aunts went to check every show they could of that. And when I talked to them about, like, why, you guys know this music? You have the records of it and all that. What it was? They loved singing with the band. They loved dancing in the aisles and that, and right, interacting with the band. I got a lot of that when I was watching the videos of the Uptown. Right. I got a lot of that same feeling. And it's one thing to enjoy some of the greatest songs you'll ever hear, which is what Motown gave us. But it's also this fun because you know the songs, being able to interact with your fellow audience and the actual act.
Yep.
They encourage that.
And they do the song Uptown. So
Yeah. That's so
that
good.
One everybody is going to be getting into for sure. So
that's a fun one coming up February 8th. We move on to March.
Then in March, we have a very busy weekend, starting with Thursday, March 7th. We're having How Sweet It Is, which is Steve Leslie singing the music of James Taylor. This act was actually recommended to me by the agent for Steve Lippia, who performed a few years ago with the Central Wisconsin Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I think he's awesome, and I would definitely take anything that they recommend into consideration. And when they sent me the clips on this guy, I was like, this is James Taylor.
Yeah.
To a T. Sounds like him, looks like him, acts like him. It's definitely a James Taylor experience.
He seems like he's got a lot of the personality, too.
Yes.
Like, there seems like, you know, there's a kinship almost there with the two. Because it's uncanny how much not only he sounds like him, but his little movements, even the way he's playing the guitar is very similar to James Taylor.
I think he definitely has been, you know, studying this for a long time, trying to emulate everything that James Taylor does.
It's interesting with all of these acts and a couple of the other ones we're going to talk about here, that the idea of how, you know, when we were growing up and we'd see a cover band, you know, they knew the songs, and that was kind of what they did. They do the songs, and that was about it and everything. And that's just not enough for the modern cover artists. Right. They want to, it's almost like there's a bit of acting involved where they become this person.
Exactly.
And it's so, like, it's the experience you get from it as a viewer is so much more, like, rewarding and enhancing.
Right.
And How Sweet It is one of those ones where, you're going to feel like you get to see a James Taylor concert, which is great. Steve does a really good job with that.
Yeah.
Similar story coming up with Always Olivia.
Always Olivia. So we move on to Sunday. I get a couple days to rest in between. And then we move to Sunday. We're trying a Sunday afternoon show for something a little bit different.
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes attendance-wise.
How did that come about? The idea to do this?
Well, from the survey that we hand out. And Thursday is always the number one date, which works great for us because sometimes we can also get a better deal on a performer's fee on a weekday.
Right on. Yeah, I bet.
So, and Thursday doesn't compete with a lot of sports, so that's kind of what we look at. But we thought, you know, a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, a lot of people who are looking at not driving, not wanting to drive in the dark anymore, can make this one. So we thought we'd throw it in the mix.
Also shows the importance of those surveys and how important it is that your feedback we get and Sally gets and her team does so that they can make these kind of calls and these decisions.
Right. Hmm.
So, busy weekend in March.
So this one is Always Olivia, and it's Olivia Newton-John tribute, obviously. The neat thing about this is that Annie Aiello is the person who portrays Olivia, and she donates a portion of her fees to the Olivia Newton-John Cancer Fund. So we thought, why don't we continue that? And $3 of every adult ticket sold is being donated to the Aspirus Women's Cancer Patient Fund and will be used locally. There's also a separate tab that I set up in our donations tab on our website where you can donate in addition to that if you like. And I've actually had some people bumping up to even out the price of their ticket package to just, you know, add a little extra in. So that's kind of cool. So we will present a check to Aspirus probably at the last show because we want to make sure we've got all the funds. You can donate right up until showtime for Always Olivia.
I do my homework for these interviews. I did not know that. And you got me on that, Sally. Like a lot of people out there, I've lost some people very close to me to cancer, breast cancer in particular. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And this is a nonprofit doing that, everybody. I want that to be lost on the audience out there. Every penny matters for you guys to do something like that.
Yep.
Thank you. More power to you. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And if someone is not familiar with this fund, it stays local and it helps women and cancer patients with whatever they're having problems with, just trying to make their lives a little bit easier as they're going through treatment.
It was important to her and her, not her legacy, but important to her that this work continued after her passing. And it's so cool to think of her memory and her legacy involving this, along with Grease and all the great songs and everything. This is another part of her legacy now.
Absolutely.
It's so cool. Yep. And this lady is amazing.
She's
really got it down. Got the legs even of Olivia. Like, I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, just by the look, but her moves are very similar to Olivia's. She's a really good performer.
Yes.
You got a very busy, fun weekend that weekend.
Absolutely. It'll be worthwhile.
Make sure we'll have to do our morning, midday magazine like before. Like well before that, give you a break and everything.
Right.
The season continues in April, and we got a really fun act coming up in April. I love acts like this that focus on this particular act or this particular comedy group.
And we wanted to bring in a combination of, you know, comedy and music, and we thought this one really fit the bill.
Yeah.
So it's Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis tribute show. So we have Tom Stevens and Tony Lewis, and they really do capture the essence of the memorable duo that, you know, the mannerisms, everything. Yeah. It's fantastic.
The awkwardness of Jerry, the coolness of Dean.
Exactly.
It is on display for you there. And the thing that these two have down that I haven't always seen with acts that do this, the chemistry.
Right.
I don't think we talked enough about Dean and Jerry's chemistry, how great that was together.
Right.
And these two got that. They got that down, along with doing great impressions and the timing that they have.
Do.
I can't imagine how much rehearsing they did because they've got the timing down.
Yes. And we do have a backup band with this, too. Some people have been asking about that, whether it's just the two of them on stage. We had the option of getting just tracks in the background, and we chose to give you the full experience.
I like that. So. Nice. And a good call by you guys. I know we got other things to talk about, so I don't want to get too in the weeds here, Sally. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to these acts, it seems really cool to wrap up the season on a comedy show with a little music thrown in there. Was that intentional, or is that just what the schedule played out as?
It's kind of how it played out.
Yeah.
You know, we have to juggle dates with when the Performing Arts Center is available. And we actually originally were looking at the fall for them. But then we did a little bit of juggling, and this one was the one that landed on the calendar.
We've got some other things we wanted to touch on before we let you go, Sally. Where do you want to go?
We do. Let's talk about outreach opportunities first.
Yeah.
So a big shout out to Mead Witter Foundation, who is sponsoring all of our outreaches this year. So the first one is with Sean Johnson and the Big Band Experience. The morning after the performance, they're going to be at Lincoln High School working with the band students.
That's so cool.
And then the Gatlin brothers. Larry Gatlin, when they were here last time, he does this amazing songwriting workshop with kids. So that will be the afternoon of the performance on November 2nd.
My God, that is amazing.
It really
Imagine being a kid in school and you get to like talk and work with Larry Gatlin.
Yeah.
My God, that's awesome.
I know.
Sorry.
It really is.
It was in the shoes of a kid right there for a second. Like, wow, that is really cool.
And then How Sweet It Is, Steve Leslie will present a music type workshop with the choir students. And then this isn't exactly an outreach, but I just wanted to mention it for MJ the Illusion. We don't have all the details worked out yet, but we're going to choose a local choir that will get music ahead of time, and then they can come up on stage and perform with them.
Wow.
They agreed to do this. We had this arranged with the original
And the new guy
agreed
to do
this. And the new guy agreed to do this, too. We also have a dance workshop for a limited number of local dance students, and they will learn to dance and come up and perform.
I'm going to try to sneak into that, Sally. The first performing I did was breakdancing, okay? I mean, I have a little bit of history with this. That is really cool.
You might have to shave in order to.
Might have to. Yeah, probably would. That is really good. Along with all that, I know we had some other things we wanted to touch on.
Oh, we do. We've added quite a few extra things here. We really appreciate our season ticket holders. Mm-hmm. So anybody who purchases tickets for four or more shows is considered a season ticket holder. Mm-hmm. And those sales started July 24th, and they continue up until you can buy at least four. Mm-hmm. But anybody who has purchased tickets to date up to the October show, we are putting on a little bit of an appreciation reception before the Shawn Johnson show. It'll be at 6 o'clock. It'll run from 6 to 7. Just light appetizers and, we'll talk to them a little bit. We just want to, thank them. We're also including our sponsors, inviting our sponsors for the season as well. So it'll be a little social hour. It's going to be held in the area at Lincoln High School between the cafeteria and the library, that new really cool area with the fireplace and stuff.
I've heard about it, yeah.
So if anybody is interested and you're a season ticket holder, just RSVP. There's no charge, but we'd kind of like an idea for how much food.
Similar to the surveys, this is an opportunity to interact with you and the team and everything. And also just nice by you guys to be able to show some, thank you to them.
Sure.
It's a mutual thing.
And then anybody who is a season ticket holder can make a referral. We've started a new referral program. So I've got referral cards. If you have somebody that you would like to recommend to come in and they bring this card in with your name and phone number on, you'll be entered into a drawing for a free season ticket for the 24-25 season.
Wow.
So keep in mind, and we'll be promoting that at that reception as well.
Sure.
And then before the Gatlin Brothers, we are doing a dinner at Lake Air. It's $30, and that includes tax and gratuity. And you do have to make your selection ahead of time between chicken Oscar, broiled salmon, or oven roasted tenderloin. They will start cocktails at 4:30, eat promptly at 5:30 so that you can get to the show. You'll be done by 7 to get to the 7:30 performance.
Oh, very cool. That is going to be nice. And dinner and a show.
Yeah, and we're limited to 120 people, but and right now I think we currently have 39.
Okay, all right.
So we're moving along.
Get those tickets now, everybody.
Then the final thing I'd like to talk about, we have a new show sponsor this year in Mid-State Technical College.
All right.
And when they heard that we were doing the meal for Lake Air, they said, what about our culinary arts program?
Oh, yeah.
And getting those students involved a little
smart
bit. So we are doing a supper club themed appetizer event at Mid-State in their gourmet cafe. The food will be there from 5:30 to 7, and the cost is $15 per person. That includes food, water, and coffee. There will be a cash bar, and they're looking at creating some kind of specialty cocktail associated with the supper club theme, probably some type of old-fashioned for purchase. So we're actually limited to 48 for that one, but we're going to give it a shot and see what happens, and maybe down the road we can move to a larger space.
A great way to combine our good friends at Mid-State, a local organization, local school that we certainly puts a lot into this community. We like to put into them and support and everything.
Right.
It's a nice mutual combination right there. And I know how much they love these events where they get to interact with people, especially these kids. This is why they're taking these classes, is to feed you. They're going to get a chance to do that in a special, fun, kind of unique way. That's awesome.
And this is toward the end of their season. It's in April. April. So they'll have like almost a whole year of classes under their belts.
Got an amazing year ahead, Sally. I am looking forward to October and this kicking off so much. If people have follow-up questions, want to know more about some of what we've talked about today, or just look into getting tickets, what should they do? How can they get a hold of you?
Okay, our phone number is 715-424-2787, or you can stop by and see me at 1040 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids. Our office hours are 10 to 2:30 Monday through Thursday.
And again, go to the website if you'd like to find out more information. SavorTheArts.com, SavorTheArts.com. Always fun talking with you, Sally. Thank you so much for everything you do for our community and the time.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We'll talk again real soon.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
It's not just about the barrels in construction. Highway projects are community investments. So do your part. Stay alert, eliminate distractions, and mind your speed. Every driver makes a difference. Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. You can learn how to keep your kids and yourself safe on the internet next Tuesday at the Marshfield Public Library. Let's Keep Talking, Parent and Caregiver Series takes place the third Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. The August 15th session is about internet safety.
Technology is constantly changing, and it's hard to keep up with what's going on.
That's Joanne Greenlee, the mental health navigator for the School District of Marshfield. She said the meetings are informal and promote open communication between the presenters and parents. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services wants to train 10,000 people to be state-certified caregivers through a free online course. The program was developed with help from UW-Green Bay. The program also gives people a chance to connect with employers who are hiring. Workers who complete the program and get a job can earn up to $500 in hiring and retention bonuses. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight, otherwise overcast. Lows dip down to about 57. Northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, scattered thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 80. Chance for scattered storms tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 58. Partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 79.
Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this August 10th, 2023. I have your host, James, here, and we're joined right now by our good friend, Anna James, Regional National Resource Educator with UW-Madison Extension, Wood County. Anna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, James. How are you?
I'm doing good. How have you been?
Oh, well.
Good, good. Anna, we got a lot to talk about today. I don't want to get in the way of it. Let's dive right in. We're going to talk a little watershed today.
Yeah, so I realize I've mentioned watersheds on other times I've been on the show, mm-hmm. and I sometimes forget that not everybody might know what a watershed is. And I think that happens a lot within our scientific community. We throw around terms and
happens people, in radio all the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we think people know what the term is or what we're talking about. So I just kind of wanted to talk about the basics of watersheds and what they are and kind of give a scale for where we're at in watersheds in general.
And even if you're familiar with these terms, it never hurts to rehash them. It never hurts to kind of go over them again.
Right, exactly. So watersheds can be known as a couple of different terms. So we have catchment areas, catchment basins, just a basin, or a drainage basin. All of those terms are kind of thrown around in placement of what a watershed means. So a simple definition of a watershed is that it's an area of land that drains or sheds its water into a specific water body. We can go into a little bit more in depth of a definition, and that's an area of land where all flowing water like lakes, rivers, streams, and groundwater, so the water that's underground that we can't see, where that water converges to a single point. And that single point can be the mouth of a river or where a large river runs into a lake or an ocean. So we're just thinking about all of the water in a specific mm-hmm. area running to one specified point.
Is there a difference between the terms of drains or sheds?
No, they can intermix and interchange. They just mean the same thing in, mm-hmm. in terms of watersheds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's hard to kind of picture how water moves when sometimes we can't even see that water. Mm-hmm. But water within a watershed moves by formation of land and mm-hmm. gravity. So we have the Kettle Moraine mm-hmm. over here, and yeah. that kind of flows water either to the east or the west. So mm-hmm. any kind of large land formation, there's actually gravitational pull as well. And sometimes that gravitational pull can move groundwater as well, which is really interesting. So not just topography.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Every once in a while you hear something as an adult and you have the wonder of a kid when you hear it. Yeah. And it's something like that you hear, like that's just kind of from we're on this spinning rock yeah. and these things that are going on around us and under us and all that. And it's just fascinating to hear sometimes. It's just yeah. very cool. I'm a nerd about this.
No,
stuff, so I think it's cool.
I am too, James.
A little bit about you. Notice that a little bit. You're in a good field for it.
Yes, yeah.
When it comes to the watersheds constantly being supplied by new water, mm-hmm. how does that affect some of these, not only terms, but how this all plays out?
Yeah. So watersheds are consistently supplied with new water through the form of rainfall or snowmelt. Mm-hmm. So not all of the water that is coming into a watershed falls into it the same way. So sometimes if we think about spring melt, we'll see some of the water from snowmelt seep into the water, or even rainwater will seep into the ground and flow into groundwater. But other times when we have snowmelt or rainfall, some of that precipitation ends up on hard surfaces like roads, parking lots, mm-hmm. Our rooftops, and then those will go to a storm drain where they're then drained generally into a stream or a river. Mm. So there's I'll touch on this later, but there's quite a few ways where that recharge is what we call it can be polluted, but we'll talk about that later on. Yeah.
How about the size in that when it comes to watersheds?
Yeah. So I guess I kind of wanted the listeners and you, James, I want to try to take us on this mental image journey. Mm. So if you picture North America, like the United States and Canada. We'll picture the United States and Canada. So watersheds can vary in size depending on the scale that they're viewed at. So we're going to view it in a large scale format first. Okay. So we've got the Mississippi River watershed, which is in the United States, mm-hmm. right? So we're picturing the United States and Canada, and we're picturing the Mississippi River where it flows from Minnesota, and I think it drains in Louisiana. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah, Louisiana.
So, yeah.
And so all of the different water bodies that flow into the Mississippi River, mm. now that's considered one large watershed area. And the drainage area of the Mississippi River watershed, it's draining more than 1 million square miles of land into the Gulf of Mexico.
That's incredible.
That's incredible.
Jeez.
And it stretches from the Appalachian Mountains mm-hmm. all the way over to the Rocky Mountains in the west. And it's got 31 U.S. states and 2 Canadian provinces in it. So a majority of the water from that area drains to the Mississippi River, which then flows right into the Gulf of Mexico. So that's a huge area.
Yeah. Having it laid out for you like that, too, even if you might have known that, I think mm-hmm. hearing the way you described it and having us picture it this way, it just becomes that much more not only impressive, you know, for one, but also hopefully, again, you know, something we'll touch on a little bit later, how important it is wherever you are along that Mississippi that you're treating that well.
Yeah.
Because somebody else is getting that water. Somebody else is using that water as well.
Right, correct. Yeah, mm. and we're definitely going to touch on that, kind of the impacts portion later on. But now if we kind of zoom in and you picture the state of Wisconsin in your head, there are 24 identified large-scale basins or watersheds within Wisconsin. and then we're going to zoom in again and think about central Wisconsin. So one of those 24 basins is known as the Central Wisconsin Basin, which extends from the Merrill Dam on the Wisconsin River in Lincoln County, mm-hmm. and it goes all the way down to the Castle Rock flow Stowage Dam in Juneau and Adams County. So that's a pretty large span, and that's just one watershed within central Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going to scale down one more time. Mm-hmm. Within that central Wisconsin area, we have, and I guess just to mention, the central Wisconsin basin, it's one of the most diverse watershed areas in Wisconsin. There's 4,021 square miles in 13 different counties, and it contains over 2,873 miles of streams.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's, that's a lot of water just in our area, right?
Yeah.
So if you live in Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, anywhere in central Wisconsin, that's where your water is going. And then if we think about just Wood County in general, and Wisconsin Rapids, Wood County itself is in 9 small watersheds. Yeah, so it's, you can really scale it depending on the size, right? So we started at the state the United States and Canada, kind of North America, and then we zoomed into Wisconsin, and then we zoom into central Wisconsin, and then Wood County. You know, while we think about that, all of the water in that largest scale that we think thought about is directly impacted at the smallest scale that we thought about. So
it's a little funnel-like.
Right. It's like the Russian nesting doll. That's kind of what I try to think of them.
Good.
That's what I try to think of them as. And there's lots of reasons why we should care about our watersheds or why we should think about it in that small scale, but then the large scale as well. So the way that we treat our local watersheds, like you were kind of getting to, has such a large impact, not only on us directly, but on that larger scale, right? So when we are, it doesn't matter the impact, whether it's positive or negative, sometimes we can't directly see that right away. But further on down the watershed in the larger scale perspective, they are seeing the effects of that.
It's important that while you're seeing a small body maybe of land or water or what have you, understanding how much that stretches out, how much that affects so much.
Right.
I think really one of the ways of really pushing people, especially people on the fence when you're trying to convince people, hey, water preservation matters or PFAS or any of these things that come up and everything. I understand how it can be daunting to people sometimes when these subjects come up and they seem so big or, what can I do or how can I impact it and everything. For me, being a history nerd is very helpful because I know that our country was built on our land, our water, and our waterways, and fur trappers and all these other people
the
being
beavers,
able. They were the first. They were the first trains. They were the first. You know, they were the first way we transported stuff and everything. So if you understand that, I think you understand pretty quickly. Water's pretty darn important, and it stretches, and it doesn't just matter to me here in Wisconsin. It affects people in Louisiana. It affects people up north in Canada and this kind of thing. Getting more people to get this understanding and have more of this empathy for this, I think you're able to do that with some of the way you're doing this right now. That's really good.
No, thank you. And, you know, I've said this before, I don't like to focus on the doom and gloom of what it could be. I like to focus on the positives of it and where we've already come from. I mean, the Fox River and the Green Bay area, there were rivers that literally were on fire, like water was on fire consistently. And now they've cleaned that up. And even here in Wisconsin Rapids, the Wisconsin River here used to not be very pretty at all. It was tremendously different than what we see today. So we have come a long way, and we are continuing to go the long way.
When my family first moved here, part of the pull was, well, we came from Chicago, where we got Lake Michigan right there. Oh, we got a river right here. It's very, you know, familiar to us and everything. And then, you know, we talk to locals and find out that river, you don't want to go near that river, or you don't want to fish in that river or something like that.
Yeah.
Within a short amount of time, that started to change and to where we are now, where we encourage people to do these things. And the rivers are so much safer, and really the area is safer for it. The area is better for it. I think one of the things that I've noticed to really pull people into conservation, to really get people to care about this stuff, one of the things that'll always get the person that is on the fence or completely on the other side, economics. If you don't care about the planet, you probably care about your taxes. You probably care about money, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
This is all intertwined.
It is. And the thing about it, too, is you talk about economics being a driver for, you know, getting people to care. But it is also a driver of getting the actual practices on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. So it is driven by the economics of it. And I think last show I talked about, you know, if you do live on a lake or a river or stream, there's an exponential benefit to, you know, improving your shoreline in an economic, you know, mindset. It improves not only your lake, but also mm-hmm. the value of your property and your right. home. So
there isn't a downside to conservation. There is no, you know, side effect of well, you're gonna lose this, you're gonna lose that. No, we're gaining, we're growing, right. and we're also showing, for whatever it's worth, too, on a PR level,
yeah.
the majority of the world is going this direction. Right. You're only gonna enhance and look like a much more open-minded and a welcoming community and area, which is going to want to bring people to move to that area, mm-hmm. live in that area. People aren't moving to areas where they don't care about their environment.
Right.
That just isn't happening. People aren't moving to areas where they're not doing anything for their river that's running through town, and they're just going to let whatever happen to mm-hmm. that. Why would you move to that town? You're moving to places where they're showing, hey, I live here and I care about this place, so I'm putting back into it.
Right. Yeah, and you know, you don't have to be, I know sometimes with conservation or environmentalism, you know, those two terms get really mixed up with each other, and, mm-hmm. and one generally takes a negative connotation. You don't have to label yourself one of those things to do a good thing for your environment and for your community in general. And so, you know, you don't have to be out there saying, oh, I did this to mm-hmm. do, you know, to protect the water resources. You can go quietly about it. Mm-hmm. And just, that's everyday life, just being a good steward to your yeah. land and letting it show in your actions and not your words. So.
Anna James, Regional Natural Resource Educator with UW-Madison Extension with us right now. I had to get your name in after that yeah. great quote. That was a great line. That was good. And you're so right about this. I love to see even more of that from people mm-hmm. where I'm doing something good. Let me get a selfie real quick here. Let me, you know, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Right.
You don't have to, if you're doing it, that's enough. That's right. promotion in itself.
Yep. Yep. And the thing too, it's people are going to see your actions mm-hmm. And probably be a little bit more mindful of your actions than your words, right?
Yeah. Yes, but, yeah. absolutely. Yeah. That, again, well said, because you can talk all day, but if you're not putting any action to it, people are smart. They see that. They yeah. notice that. It's so much more about the action. As words are important and everything, but they almost cease to mean anything if you don't put the actions behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do we have an example of this kind of the oh, I got ahead of myself, I think, here.
That's okay.
Sorry. when we talk about caring about this yeah. stuff, like you and I have been,
yeah.
Can we give people more incentive or another reason why they should care about these things along with some of the stuff we've been talking about?
Yeah, yep. So if, you know, we started with that perspective of looking large scale to small scale. Now, if we reverse that and look at the small scale to large scale, like we had mm-hmm. said, what we do on our property or within our community has a larger impact just then, you know, us in our area. So any pollutants, so when we had talked about the way that the watersheds are recharged through snowmelt and rainfall, any pollutants that are on the land, that snowmelt or that rainfall can mm-hmm. absorb that and can collect that, yeah. and then it runs into the watershed, mm-hmm. right? Reality is we're not going to reduce that 100%, but mm-hmm. there are mitigation ways that we can reduce that, right? So that's being mindful of the fertilizer you're using on your lawns, on golf courses, on ag fields. Mm-hmm. That's being mindful of, like, our stormwater drains, and being mindful of, you know, any kind of pollution, just, like, littering or any, like, you know, or changing the oil in your mm-hmm. vehicle, making sure that you have a proper pan that you're collecting that oil in. There's so many different things that we can be mindful of. So like I said, we might not always see the direct effects of our impact, but the others can. And a great example of this would be the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Mm-hmm. So that hypoxic zone is also known as a dead zone. So what happens when we think of the large scale, right? The Mississippi River watershed in the state, or in, not the state of Wisconsin, in the United States and Canada, all of that water, including all of the pollutants, are being carried down into the Mississippi River and then down to the Gulf of Mexico. So those large amounts of nutrients from lawns, sewage treatment plants, farmlands, other sources along the Mississippi River, those are all being deposited into the Gulf of Mexico, where they're actually triggering large algal blooms. Hmm. When you have a large algal bloom, the oxygen levels in the water actually decrease, which makes it not a viable habitat or area for fish and aquatic, actually marine life to live there. So there's actually a huge dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico where there's giant algal blooms and almost zero marine life that's living there. Yeah.
It's and these kind of things fall on all of us.
Yeah.
You know, when history looks back at this stuff, they're not going to say, yeah, they did a horrible job, except for James and Anna.
Yeah,
they did a nice job. Everybody else. You know, we're all on the same page here. Right. We all have this in our grasp to do something about. This is tense, what happened at the Gulf.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to happen in other places, too. Right. We can prevent that from happening.
Right. And it's intense for the people that live down there, right? Yeah. We don't see it. We're all the way up in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But it's intense for the people down on the Gulf. I'm sure it is.
Well, and I hope it's not lost on people, whether you're in Wisconsin or anywhere else listening to us here in the States. That could be us.
Yeah.
It could happen to you. If it could happen to them, it could happen to us.
It could happen to us. I mean, we have Lake Michigan. We have Lake Superior. Those are things. It could easily happen on those bodies of water because they in themselves are watershed areas, right? They're streams and rivers and groundwater that are flowing into those Great Lakes where they could potentially have an algal bloom like that if we don't be mindful of our actions.
And I think it's important to always remember, our place in this world with America, where we tend to be the trendsetters. Mm-hmm. We tend to be the ones. The rest of the planet wasn't doing a whole lot of green, but then we started to do it, and Canada, Mexico start jumping along with that. We set the tone in many ways, not with everything, and not to make ourselves bigger than another country or anything like that. We're all pretty even, I look at it. But there's certain things. Look at our music. Look at our influence on pop culture around the world. It doesn't just stop there. When we do these kind of things, when big businesses, lower their emissions by this much or something, it's noted throughout the world. So when we do something here, even if it's in central Wisconsin, everybody's watching. People are noticing these things.
Yeah.
And this stuff tends to be contagious.
Yeah.
This stuff tends to be, I'm in a province in Canada and I see this. And that's a really good idea. We should get on that. And they start doing something.
Right. And the thing is, too, it's those partnerships are being recognized. And they have been recognized over the years. I mean, we are doing a really wonderful job from where we have. And I don't want that to be lost in this. I mean, we're doing a great job. There are partnerships, where people in my positions are working with, different states or different countries even. And the cool thing about those partnerships and recognizing where there is innovation is being able to adopt that innovation, like you had said. So there's something that Canada is doing that we are now doing, or, somewhere in Europe. And we're adopting those practices. So it does take us all to think about that and to really make a wonderful impact.
And it feels like we're wrapping up on a bright side. Very cool. We both like that. We both wrap up on a good note here.
Yeah. Yep. So like I had said, on the bright side, any positive impact that we take on our local scale, especially with our watersheds, has a much larger impact than we will probably ever see in our lifetimes, right? And no matter the size or scale or how you choose to improve water resources around you, you can be confident in knowing that that good deed really goes a long way, not just to the Mississippi River, down to the Gulf of Mexico, right?
Well played. Well played. That was good. And I'm glad we talked about this too on the large and big scale. You set this up perfectly for us. Sometimes it's not about the things you do. Sometimes it's the things you don't do.
Right.
This area used to have a problem with people dropping electronics or engines or things on the side of the road or in a lake or a dam or something. And now I think we understand not only that what that impact is, but that we have other places to drop these things off. We have other places to do these things. When you hesitate, when you don't do that, right there, you're a conservationist.
Yep.
You know, it's the least you can do, I would think, but it's still something. And just using that as an example of the least of examples of that's something right there. Yeah. Even that makes an impact.
Right.
Very, very few people can cure polio.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few of us that have a chance to impact literally the whole world. But if everybody does something in their neck of the woods and their zip code, that adds up. Mm-hmm. Our zip code does, and the one next to us does, and the one next to us does. And before you know it, you've got change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing to be really mindful is too, is you had mentioned this before, is a lot of people like to point their fingers when it comes to pollution, and especially water quality. There's one major group I'm thinking of that gets the fingers pointed at them a lot.
Yeah.
I would just challenge anybody to take a look inwardly and, you know, at you and in your direct impacts and say, what am I doing here that I could improve, instead of pointing the finger for somebody else to do it, right? No, we're not going to get anywhere with pointing fingers. It's everybody taking a look inside themselves and on their properties and saying, yeah, I'm doing this, and admitting to it. It's fine. If you admit to it and you do something about it, that's wonderful. I will applaud you any single day. Mm-hmm. If you admit to it and you do something about it, I will applaud you any single day.
Same here.
Yeah. So
I'd love to see a growth and a change in society of not only self-awareness, but self-responsibility.
Yeah.
And taking that kind of initiative. I've said this before on the air. I just can't, as I get older, I can't really respect or appreciate people that cannot, not only one, take a joke. You got to be able to laugh at yourself in life, but also that I have no personal responsibility. You know, it's on all of us to make this planet keep moving the way it has, spinning the way it has. And when you do that, just in your little your address, even let alone your zip code, that does have an impact. It really does make a difference. I did want to, before we wrapped up, Anna, mention that you guys are going to be at the Central Wisconsin State Fair.
We will be. So Wood County will have a booth at the Central Wisconsin State Fair. We will be in the junior fair building. So if you want to come visit me, I'll be there Thursday morning from 8 to noon. And then I did want to mention one more thing. If you are curious about the watershed that you live in, Wisconsin DNR has a great resource known as the Surface Water Data Viewer. You can go online, take a peek at that. You can just, on the layers portion, click on watershed boundaries, play around with the map, see what watershed you're in, and then look at what watersheds there are in the state and how you're making an impact on them.
Well, I can't wait to look at that. I'm going to check that out. That's interesting. It's always interesting and fun talking with you, Anna. I wish we had another half an hour. I love to talk more with you, but thank you for the time. Looking forward to the next.
Thank you so much, James.
Well, a more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Entire towns have been decimated, and at least 36 people have been killed in several wildfires still burning in Maui. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti is there.
We're on a boat headed to Lahaina. This is one of the few ways to access the town. And what's incredible from this vantage point is the scale of destruction. We're talking miles of coastline completely burned.
Oh my gosh, look at the harbor.
Dustin Kaliapu is also shocked. He says he has nothing left to go back to.
My grandparents' house completely destroyed. My mother's house, my brother's house, everyone that I know. I've seen their houses just brought down to piles of ash. There's nothing recognizable in the rubble.
President Biden declared a major disaster in Hawaii today to get FEMA resources there ASAP. Airlines are also helping. United is sending empty planes to get thousands of tourists off the island. And Delta says it's sending supplies to help residents and volunteers on the ground. Five Americans are no longer in prison in Iran ahead of a possible prisoner swap with the U.S. CBS's Margaret Brennan has the latest.
We know that this has been in process for weeks, and it wasn't until today that four of the Americans who were held in a notorious Evin prison were released to house arrest. So they are not on a plane home just yet. They have been released into more humane conditions where they are expected to be held under guard at a hotel in Tehran. A fifth American was already under house arrest.
Former President Trump's valet Walt Nada has pleaded not guilty to new federal charges of misleading investigators who were trying to recover classified documents. Here's CBS's Christopher Cruz.
Nada had already pleaded not guilty to some charges in the case, but returned to court to face additional counts filed in a superseding indictment last month. Another Trump aide, Carlos de Oliveira, a property manager at Trump's home in Florida, appeared alongside Nada, but didn't enter a plea because he doesn't yet have a local lawyer.
The feds are investigating another fatal crash involving a Tesla Model Y that crashed into a semi in Virginia. Reporter Jeff Gilbert.
This time, it was the driver of a Tesla Model Y that drove directly into the side of a tractor trailer that was pulling out of a Virginia truck stop. It's too early to know if Tesla's autopilot system was involved, but this is similar to other fatal crashes. Tesla has said that drivers need to remain engaged and ready to take control.
Check your candle stock. Target is recalling more than 2 million threshold candles due to laceration and burn hazards. The glass jar candles are sold in multiple sizes and various scents. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. But not with ZipRecruiter. It's